Welcome to The Watchman. Get ready for awakening teachings on the end times, Bible prophecy, and on the times and seasons in which we live. The King is coming.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Watchman. And we have some interesting subjects to talk about here today, including Israel's response, which we had speculated might not happen, but did actually happen, although in a bit of a limited fashion, as well as a few other things that we have to talk about. And as always, I'm with the evangelist John Paul Akena as we delve into some of the matters that are of interest, first of all, to Bible prophecy and also to the church and the age in which we live. So today I want us to talk a bit about a policy that is being drafted again by the Department of Ethics and Integrity under the Office of the President, which is which they have been trying to do all along, I think, since 2003. And they have been trying and failing to come and deliver a policy that gags, that puts church under the state. That's the whole purpose of it, although it will not be stated like that. Now, the reason, of course, they failed is previously so many pastors and men of God have come out and resisted it and said they do not need any policy or any new law that governs strictly religious faith-based organizations, or because the people who congregate in these churches and the people who lead them are subject to the same laws that govern everybody. So the argument has always been there is no need for a new legislation that apparently targets only religious people. Now, when that happens, it leads to a lot of abuse, as we've seen in some countries, down south, specifically Zambia and even Zimbabwe, when it comes as if there is an outcry for, you know, a lot of abuse within the church, you know, and the need for the government to get involved. But government does not get involved and make things better. It always makes things worse. First of all, let's get that straight. First, and secondly, they come in as if solving a problem, and actually they themselves create, you know, the whole hullabaloo about the problem, so that they can come in and appear to solve it, but actually the whole purpose of it is to put the church under the state, in a way that the state controls the church, and in a way that churches are part of government, what they call MDs, ministries, departments, and agencies.
Yes.
Now, that is so demonic. That is so demonic because the people who went ahead of us in democracy spoke about the separation of church and state. Now, when they said that, they meant two things. First of all, of course, that was a phrase that came out of America. And the reason it came out of America is because they came from the UK, most of those people, and some of them were fleeing religious persecution. And in the UK, the official religion of the state or of the kingdom was Protestantism.
Yes.
And therefore, those who were not part of that religion were almost like as if second-class citizens. So these people ran away, not necessarily entirely because of that, but partially perhaps because of that, and then they went. So when they went to America, they said that there should be a separation of church and state in the way that the state shall not have an official religion. Everyone is free to pursue God as they like, in whichever way they like, and the state shall have no say in the matter, in the matters of spirituality and how people pursue their God. So they came up with the thing of a separation of church and state.
Yes.
Now, in the UK, when the church was put under the state, I'm just giving you a historical background. A church was put under the state, the church died, because that's what always happens when the church is under the state, because the state sponsors,
funds
the churches. They bring it about in some kind of you know, nice way that, you know, because they are helping the state deal with people's morals and what, and they are part of the development and what. And it might sound good, but it is the death of the church.
Yes.
And always ends up in the death of the church. In places where the church has thrived, it has been separate from the state and doing things on its own. Now, of course, there are some people who, when they hear that, oh, if they say this sort of funding, they will run for it. But that's the death of it.
Yes.
Anyway, so eventually it came to a time where, because the bishops and clerics are being funded by state, they're not giving any life whatsoever.
Yes.
And because they're not giving any life, nobody goes there. Now, I've been in some of these nations, and you see, particularly the UK, and you see a building which was built long ago as a church, and some of them are being turned into worship houses for demonic practices and so on, because people are no longer going to church, and because there is a bishop who is paid by the government, and he has a house which is, you know, funded by the everything is done by the government, yeah. And his duties is to come and preach on Sunday to like 3 or 4 80 or 90 year olds who are perhaps at that age discover they might need God.
Yeah.
And so eventually they became irrelevant, all those places.
Yeah.
Now, that's what actually happens when the church goes under the state.
Mm.
It always leads to irrelevance.
Yes.
Because there are things which churches offer which a state can never offer.
Yeah.
Then we go to America where they said, okay, now separation of church and state.
Yes.
Church and state cannot be working. Neither can be under the other.
Yes.
So the state cannot have any official religion.
Yes.
So they came up with that. Also, it also has its issues here and there, but it's much better.
Yeah.
Because at least there, the church thrived a bit because it was independent of the state.
Yes.
And so people... Now, what we are seeing here is an attempt to put the church under the state.
Yes.
And I went and met the people from the Directorate of Ethics and Integrity, who even include the permanent secretary, the man called Mr. Kelo Bangamoy, and he was saying, I was listening to him, and what I saw, a few other people within the department, because we had a whole meeting in the boardroom, and I was telling them about my misgivings concerning this policy that they are coming up with. But what I saw is these are just civil servants who are looking to have something to keep them busy, but not just busy, because if they can pass this religious policy through the systems and goes through cabinet and it is passed, then they will have a vote in the next budget, in the next financial year starting July, and then they can have some money to buy themselves Pajeros and all that and so on.
Yes.
So it's for them, it's just about money, just like all government employees.
Yes.
It's just about money and how to get state funds, how to milk the state of money for themselves. But I told them, you're looking for money, and I know this is what the purpose of all this, but you're putting up something very, very dangerous, which is going to cause a historical problem just because you're looking for some little money here. And I promised them that I'm going to fight this policy to the end, and I am going to fight it, and they are not going to pass it.
Yes.
Because I've refused, they are not going to pass it. So if they want to steal money from government, let them find something else to steal from. Let them leave the churches out of this. Now, I'm saying this because if you're a man of God or a pastor or even any other person, and I want you to be alert to this, there has to be an outcry from within the churches, because they say it's about all churches, but mostly about the born-again churches. That's the truth. Because all the others are almost impenetrable. You're not going to go to the Catholic Church and start telling them what to do. You're not going to go to the, you know, to the Muslims and start telling them what to do. In theory, it's about all churches.
Yes.
But in practice, it's actually about the born-again churches. And I told these people that there are two supposedly independent segments of society that governments, especially dictatorial governments, always want to have under their control. Always. The first one is the media. The second one is church or faith. And I know the genesis of all of this and how the media became captive, completely captive here in Uganda. Because, believe it or not, in the early 90s and late 80s, the media were a bit free. Well, I mean, largely very free, and they could virtually do anything they wanted and so on. And then one day, I think about, that must have been around 1994-5, there and thereabout, the former president of Zambia, Kenneth Kaunda, the late now, came to Uganda, and there was a state visit. So when he was, he and the president, Museveni, were having a media interview where media people were asking the Kaunda questions. What happened is one journalist asked a very insensitive question about Kaunda's son who had died of HIV. And there was a lot of stigma around HIV at the time, such a heavy amount of stigma. And the question was is very insensitive and uncalled for and actually plain stupid. And even the media people agreed that this man had overstepped the boundaries, because this was not the purpose of the former president of Zambia being here. And what his son died of and so on was a very private matter. But then now, because of that, our president here, took advantage and told the media people, you see, there are a lot of, you know, quirks within the journalism profession. And so we should come up with something to regulate the media and streamline it to solve this problem. And the journalists fell for it. But president is not interested in streamlining. He's interested in controlling. And that's what it is always about. Don't ever be deceived that government is coming to streamline and make... No, it doesn't do that. It comes to control. It always does come to control. Anyway, so to cut a long story short, the problems which were existing in the journalistic profession at the time still exist right now. None of them were solved. However, now all journalists need a practicing certificate according to the rules of NIJU, National Institute of Journalists of Uganda, need a practicing certificate which must be renewed every year by government for them to practice journalism. That's according to the laws. Whether or not it's enforced is a different thing, but it is there in the laws. So, somehow, if you write something which they don't like, they can withdraw your journalism practicing certificate. Okay? The next year. The next year. So eventually it leads to control.
Yes.
Now, here is where we are going with this. Because there are some misguided souls, especially in mainstream and so on, who think, there's a lot of excesses in the church and, you know, people are whatever, the languages they use. For instance, here in this policy, it says that as the sands of time have shifted, we find ourselves confronted with a dualistic challenge. On the one front, the manipulation of congregations by certain leaders within religious and faith organizations. Now, that exacerbated by the absence of a clear framework governing their registration and regulation. Now, you see, they say regulation, but actually it's control. Because they control the registration, that one, it's okay for them to tell churches where they should register, but how they preach, what they do, what they practice, who preaches, is supposed to be none of government's business, and it should remain that way. So far, it has been that way. But now this is what these idle people at the Department of Ethics and Integrity are trying to change. So anyhow, as I told you that there are people who have been misguided. Because you have one instance. And now this is the problem which people have when they do not make principled arguments. So you have one instance where, let's say, Akena took advantage of somebody. Then you think now that calls for a law to govern everybody just because one person took advantage of the other. I don't even know what they mean by taking advantage.
In other words, even their existing laws, which
and Akena can be charged very well within existing laws.
Yes.
So first of all, even by very definition, any law that targets just faith is unconstitutional.
Yes.
It's not because laws are supposed to be to cut across.
Yes.
Okay? So if it goes for just one segment of the population, then what kind of law is that? Okay? You cannot come up with a law and say that this law is just for this segment. No, it's not. Anyhow, this thing is going to be defeated politically.
Yes.
Because if it goes through cabinet and passes, then of course there are other means by which we can fight it, but I don't want us to get to that stage.
Yes.
Now, previously, I went and talked to pastors, and there were all sorts of, because people are so used to people making arguments for themselves, I went there and told them, you people, there is a law coming up. I was meeting some pastors from the National Fellowship of Born Again Churches. I told them there is a law coming up which is going to be very dangerous for our churches. And I think we should stand up and fight the law.
Yes.
Now, as soon as you tell that to pastors, they think that the law is going to target you and you're telling them to fight for you. I don't need anyone to fight for me.
Yes.
I do not need much less any of them to fight for me.
Yes.
They cannot see that I was bringing this for the benefit of everybody.
Yes.
They thought that perhaps the law is going to target either me or a segment of faith where I belong. So somehow I could see all the attitudes and what. It took a lot of effort for me to get them together in some sort of meeting. Then eventually they caught the fire because they saw that this wasn't entirely about, me or wherever it is they perceive that I belong. And eventually they stood up and actually fought it on their own, and they did a very good job.
Yes.
And there were meetings of pastors all across, and they were challenging it and saying they are not going to accept it, and ultimately it failed. And the things that those people fought are still there, formal education.
Yes.
that pastors lack formal education. Okay? Now, the pastors were saying at the time that ministry is a calling, not a profession. So, if you start subjecting everyone to formal education, and first of all, then who determines what formal education?
Yes.
Because different church organizations have trainings for their ministers, different trainings for their ministers. Okay, if you are going to be, for instance, in the I'm giving an example in the Pentecostal Assemblies of God, they have a training for their pastors, which suits their, you know, denomination. And if you are going to be, let's say, part of other churches, whichever churches, there is a training that suits them. So now, what is formal training? And how do you define it, seeing as different organizations have different training? So these are some of the issues which are still in this policy. And they have just waited for people to calm down.
And
then they bring it back, just like the devil always does. And this is the devil, make no mistake. You fight, then he goes into hibernation. Then after some time, he pops up again. So now, I am calling upon everybody who is, as we get into Bible, whatever, I'm calling upon everybody who listens to this right now. Do whatever you have to do, okay? And do not be docile. Because if you wait too long, your hands will already be tied by the time, you stand up to fight. And you see, I've seen all these issues. Because, for instance, during COVID, I was called by certain, you know, pastors to go, and apparently there was a document for Ministry of Health giving conditions under which churches will be open. And man, I have never seen such a slavery. They said that some of the things which were there, that everybody who comes to church, they have to be registered. The chair they sit on has to be marked, and then they have to be followed up, and whoever sits on that chair afterwards, if they test positive, like, it was total slavery. And what shocked me is that pastors were willing to go for it. Meanwhile, at the time when they are telling you that only a certain number of people can enter your church, and all the chairs they sit on have to be marked, that Akena sat on this chair, so they follow Akena all through
everywhere
to see if at some stages. While they were agreeing to all of that, markets were open, arcades were open, people were flooding. It was on the churches.
And no one is supposed to be marked in the market.
Yes, everyone was walking in and out of shops and markets as they pleased. But it was on the churches. And I, when people understand that, government has never been a friend of church. I wish people would know that. Like, they do not, they are not interested in the things that churches are interested in. Okay, anyway, let me leave that. So now, this time you have to come up, because there's going to be, if now here they say the primary goal of this policy is to ensure accountability within the religious faith organizations and establish a framework that enhances their capacity to service delivery. Now, service delivery, service, our services are spiritual. Now, what service delivery? We are not a government organization. And you see, now this is the whole purpose of it. It is all to put
the church
under the government. And then the government has a control over the church. Now, I'll not bore you with some of the other provisions, which I found very, very alarming. But just know that if you can't get a hold on this draft policy, because when I reached there and started pointing out to these people some of the terrible things that they had in there, then they started saying, no, this is still in draft. You see, the final one is going to come out. I told them there's not going to be a final one because we are not going to accept it. Okay? Can you imagine then they say that the policy is supposed to improve ethical and moral conduct? Now, is government becoming God? That they are in charge of morals? You see now how we have a problem. These are thieves. These are people who do all sorts of things. So I told them that church is supposed to regulate government. Not government to regulate church. Why? Because churches, people go to churches by election, by their own choice. So if I don't like a certain church, I have the choice to leave. If I don't want to give my money in a certain church, I have the freedom not to give it. If I give the money, I have chosen to give the money. It's my choice. But if I don't want to give the money, I don't give the money. Now, by contrast, government takes taxes from us, whether we want it or not. Their taxes are enforceable. Okay. Now, the churches, we are not enforceable. So now, since we are the ones who give government money. Yes. Government does not give us money. Mm. Who is supposed to regulate who?
Yes, it's the church.
We who are funding government are supposed to regulate them.
Yes.
Not them regulating us because they don't fund us.
Yes.
So until there is, if there was a time, if we are like in the UK where churches are funded by government, then maybe there might be a need for that. Then you see, when we are talking in the course of the discussion, one of their, and now this is a problem, they say, you know, pastors take advantage of gullible flock. I told them, what do you mean gullible?
Yes.
Are they underage? No. Are they mentally challenged? No. What do you mean gullible? Because they have chosen to use their money in a certain way. So should we say bars take advantage of gullible people whom, who keep on buying alcohol with their what? People have a choice to use their money the way they want.
Yes.
And until you can prove that that person is either mentally challenged,
yes,
you have no right whatsoever.
No.
Actually, that's just stupidity. It's, let me define for you stupidity. If they've asked you in school, what is stupidity? Stupidity is telling somebody how to spend his money when you had no input in how he earned it.
Yes.
That is called stupid. Telling someone how to spend his money when you had no input in how he earned that money.
Yes.
So one of their legal attache gives a story. That, you know, there's this auntie of mine. She had a piece of land, so she sold the piece of land for 10 million. And can you imagine, she went and gave her pastor 9 million. These are the things we are trying to fight. I said, look at this woman. I said, was it her land? That yes.
Yes.
Was it her money? Yes. Is she of age? Yes. Then it is none of your business. It's absolutely none of your business. Now, if these people pass this law, they are going to end the way ministries are financed.
Yes.
Because ministries are financed through willing, either they call them gifts, okay? Gifts, but you can call them tithe, offering, whatever, seed, from willing members of the of that faith organization. Now, if they start trying to say, so I said, now what are you going to do? Are you going to be giving a percentage which
people should
government says you can only give this amount of money?
Yes.
Is that what you want to pass? So now, and will that percentage be based on anything biblical or let's say from the Quran or whatever faith you are trying to infringe?
Yes.
Because this faith is based on something different, which is nothing to do with government.
Yes.
So anyway, we had a very, very heated discussion on that matter. And I'm just calling upon everybody involved because their biggest thing is churches are taking advantage. And now you see, they have their opinions and they are trying to turn their opinions into law.
Yes.
And there is no such place for opinion.
Mm.
And there is no need. And this is the main thing.
Yes.
There is no need for any extra law that is meant to govern churches only. All laws. So if I started a church and it is involved in something that is illegal, let's say in our church you can marry off people when they are 14, then I would be charged.
Yes.
Because I go against government laws.
Yes.
And
those existing government laws.
And those government laws apply to everybody. I don't have to be in church.
Yes.
So if somebody is a thief and he's, let's say, a pastor, he's charged as a thief.
Yes.
He's not charged as a pastor thief.
Mm.
What he is, what his title is, and what faith he belongs to is irrelevant.
Yes.
If he's a thief, he's a thief.
Yes.
So this is our contention.
Yes.
So anyhow, I think that's enough about the religious law. We shall be communicating with you in due time how we intend to go about this. But please cooperate with us. It's for the good of all the church. It's not good for the good of anybody. Because if this passes, it can lend itself to all manner of abuse in future.
Yes.
And the wording, and I've read this wording, and I know these wordings because I read a lot of documents, but or at least I used to at some stage in my life. But the wordings are vague in a way that always lends itself to interpretation.
Yes, you have to.
So it's about who is interpreting.
Yes.
So now that's how oppressive laws are passed.
Yes.
They are passed using vague words.
Yes.
Yeah, to oversee and to regulate and to see. There has to be a framework. What? Now, it's all sounds innocent.
But
it depends on who is interpreting.
Yes.
Now, when they want to tighten the screw, they get somebody to interpret, who is going to interpret it in his own way.
Yes.
And then that's where you find that so it was oppressive all along. Mm. It can be interpreted loosely,
yes,
but then it can also be interpreted the other way.
Yes.
And now all vague laws lend themselves to being misinterpreted.
Yes.
And they are saying, no, it's not a law, it's a policy. In Uganda, a policy is a law.
Yes.
It's a second version of a law. So now that is all. And it is so annoying because I was seeing people in the Department of Ethics and Integrity whose only interest was getting money. They are there, but they don't know the damage they are doing.
Mm.
Actually, we are not going to let them do this just because they want to get some government money.
Yeah.
Actually, I told them, I wish there was a way you could get your government money and steal your government money without tying the hands of the church.
Yes.
Anyway, I hope they do find a way to do that. But that's it with the religious policy. Eh? Now, Akena, so many things are happening in the world of Bible prophecy.
Yes.
Start by telling me what happened after last time we were on air.
Yes, we were on air. Then on Friday, we realized that now Israel actually gets to now retaliate. Because we were expecting that Israel is first going to maybe actually not attack immediately or even in this...
reason I didn't expect them to attack immediately is because there's a Passover.
Yes.
And it ends towards the end of the month.
Yes.
So I was thinking.
Yes.
Or maybe even hoping.
Yes.
That Israel would first go through their,
And some of them were actually.
Yeah, involved in the Passover and go through the, their religious rites and duties and all that. And then maybe they can think about it later.
Yes.
But they did it much earlier.
Yes. Now they did it. They went and attacked Isfahan, which is actually the nuclear city where all the nuclear facilities and armament and enrichment are being made and manufactured. Everything. Actually, that city contains both the drone and drone manufacturing factories and even the nuclear facilities enrichment. So what happened? They went and attacked the radar, which secures that place, which is an air defense system. And they just went and attacked that radar. And it was such a big attack, but in a very light way. Because what they were trying to show Iran was that we can actually attack your nuclear facility. And even if you control it and you have air defense system, we have so much technology. The technology they used to attack this, they sent some drones to Iraq first and hit some places in Iraq. And it kind of confused their defense system of Iran in that very city. And then after they launched a certain missile called surface-to-air missiles, which actually is the one which went and hit that radar, which control and give security for that city and the facility, nuclear facility in that city. So it was a very big symbol. And afterwards, when they attacked, we were looking at and waiting for Iran's immediate attack. Because Iran has said that when Israel attacks us and retaliates back, we are going to respond immediately with our own attack, now in a much bigger way. Then the photos which were coming out from Iranian media, as well Iranian responses, they said, first of all, they were saying it wasn't Israel.
Mm.
Secondly, then they began to say that this was just something so small.
Mm.
They began to belittle it to ignore the damage.
Yeah, but you know what Israel intended?
Yes.
It didn't intend to destroy a lot, by the way.
Yes.
But it was a very humiliating attack.
Yes.
Because what it did is it showed Iran how vulnerable it is.
Yes.
Because imagine you have an enemy.
Yes.
And you're secure, apparently, in your house.
Yes.
And then your enemy gets something which you know belongs to him.
Yes.
And goes and puts it in your bedroom.
Yes.
To show you that I could have killed you, but I decided not to kill you. So you wake up in the morning and you find your enemy's something in your bedroom, and you know he was there, and he left you, and then he goes.
Mm.
Now that strikes terror in you because it shows that you're vulnerable. Now that's what they did, because they went and hit that radar and around that Isfahan, around where the nuclear whatever it is.
Yes.
They hit a bit of the drone factory,
yes,
but they left the nuclear facilities.
Yes, they left it.
They left it. Mm. And but they showed Iran that if we had wanted, we would have hit them also.
Yes.
but we chose not to hit them. Mm. For me, I would say it was a diplomatic response.
Very well.
Because Israel could not have let Iran go away with bombing them directly.
Yes.
So they had to retaliate.
Yes.
But then also, if they had gone with a heavy retaliation, that could have been World War III.
Yes.
So what they did, they went with a light retaliation, whereby Israel saves face and says that, okay, we retaliated, nobody hits us and gets away scot-free. But then also Iran can save face as they have been doing, belittling it and downplaying it and what. But they know what it was.
Yes.
And the truth is Iran has been, you know, completely hammered. Because what happens is right now is that even other countries now, since they attacked Israel, even European Union is tightening sanctions.
Yes.
America is tightening sanctions.
Yes.
And Iran has discovered that they have supporters in universities who are shouting what and what, free Palestine and all that.
Yes.
But they don't have any allies.
No.
Israel, on the other hand, has allies who are ready to stand with them. Because even countries like Germany and the UK and what are ready to stand with Israel in times of war.
Yes.
Whereas the friends, the would-be friends of Iran are only waving at a distance and saying, we wish you luck.
Mm.
But it's been a humiliation for them. Because first of all, even the attack that they had on Israel, 50% of the missiles that they launched failed to take off.
Yes.
So only 50% took off.
Yes.
And those were 300 missiles.
Yes.
99% of the 50% that took off, 99% were intercepted mid-air.
Yes.
So they never hit. Only one hit the border.
Yes.
Somewhere in the border of Israel.
Yes.
There was not a single fatality.
No.
And Iran came out and said, we did not intend to, but I mean, half of the missiles they launched failed to take off. So that shows that even their missile capability is very, very poor. Mm. And then the way Israel went and hit them without any, you know, like I said, like you are in a secure house, you think you're secure, then you find the next day your enemy has come and put something right next to your bedside just to show you that I was here. And I could have done a lot, but I decided not to.
And I walked away.
And I walked away.
Clean.
Now that really scares a lot out of you. Now, then also on the other hand, Saudi Arabia acknowledged that they helped shoot down some of Iran's missiles.
Yes.
Now this actually is very, very interesting because these are supposed to be would have been because Iran has always hoped that if they can start a war with Israel, the entirety of the Muslim world would be behind them. But now you find that Saudi Arabia and Jordan, were actually fighting on the side of Israel and putting down some of those missiles which were coming from Iran. So now Iran, all the pretensions they have been laid bare. Number one, their would-be allies, China and Russia, are quiet. Okay?
Very quiet.
And they are would be friends, Saudi Arabia and what, actually fighting on the side of Israel.
Yes.
And yet Israel's friends are also fighting on the side of Israel. They're actually allies.
Yes.
And then US went back to vetoing.
Yes.
A UN, what did they veto?
They veto, because now Palestinian had gotten a bid to enter the
UN as a fully-fledged nation.
Yes, nation. And one of the things which they wanted is to now be like a fully recognized nation. And what that would have gone ahead to do was to now force a creation of a Palestinian state. But USA, they just went and they said no. They vetoed it and they did not allow it to pass in the UN. So that has actually made them like look a fool because they came out and they want to actually force that.
Because previously, of course, US did not veto and chose to abstain when a vote was passed saying that Israel should cease fire even without Hamas producing the hostages.
Yes.
And US did not veto that.
Yes.
And Palestine must have thought that, okay, now the Biden administration is bowing down to pressure from their base, who are so pro Hamas, pro Palestine. And now maybe they could be on their side.
Yes.
But now the US has got back to vetoing what Israel does not want.
Mm.
And so somehow, what Iran did by sending those images is just get Israel back into the good books of their allies, so to speak.
Mm.
Because now the sanctions are coming up on Iran. Everything seems to be moving in the opposite direction. Now, even amidst all of this, Israel went and now have entered Gaza to go and to go and attack that place, which everybody was saying, don't attack, don't attack.
Yes.
And somehow the whole world had agreed that they should not attack.
Yes.
But since Iran went and spoiled it and sent missiles to Israel, now Israel is attacking and everybody is quiet.
Very well. Yeah. They are free. And so, actually, they said now after Passover, it will take them 6 weeks.
Mm.
The first 3 weeks, it will be just to make sure they evacuate
all
these
the civilians.
Mm. And then afterwards, they'll launch full blast to make sure that they attack the four battalions, which are of Hamas.
And they destroy Hamas completely.
Completely.
So now, the honest truth is that Iran is taking a thorough beating.
Yes.
And I don't know what they are going to do about this, because it is very humiliating what has been happening. What has been unfolding throughout is humiliating.
Yes. Now, that thing which U.S. actually vetoed, it was very significant.
Mm.
Because the thing is, if that had gone ahead, that means, like I said, the creation of a Palestinian state would have happened.
Mm.
But now it cannot happen. You know, there's something which we spoke about last week and even the previous week, how everything right now is happening according to Bible prophecy.
Mm.
And it's going to the fulfillment of Bible prophecy.
Mm.
Now, because the calendar of God has to align in all the prophecies which is supposed to be fulfilled, all of them has to align now.
Mm.
So we see Israel is defeating and actually not making sure that they escalate a war with Iran, which could lead to actually a world war.
Mm.
As well, they are making sure that they strengthen their security by making sure that they fully defeat Hamas.
Mm.
Palestinian state cannot be formed now, like U.S. vetoing this desire for from Palestinians that they want a Palestinian state.
Mm.
So it's actually falling in line everything, because what I see is if they go ahead, that means afterwards they'll make sure that they'll push for their state.
Mm.
And of course, we know they are pushing for their state to be in Israel or part of Israel. Let me say the eastern part of Jerusalem, actually.
Mm.
So when that goes, Israel has to be divided, which of course is not yet the time. We know it will happen, but it's not yet the time for it. It will happen, of course, after the Gog and Magog war. That means what will happen after that war is Israel will be divided after with an interim agreement between, of course, Israel and Palestinians and other Arabs. And then when it's divided, then Israel, of course, will have some other benefits, like to build a temple, which there has actually been a lot of what I called fake news.
Mm.
Because what is happening in Israel right now, there's been a lot of discussions, which is not true, about the Red Heifer.
Mm.
Because they've actually been a lot of Christian bloggers, magazines, and all these other people, YouTubers, they've actually been saying that the Red Heifers will be sacrificed in this Passover, which has actually been untrue, very untrue. So I said that after Israel will get that liberty to build their temple and make sure the sacrifice resume and all that, and then, of course, the Palestinians will also have their own benefits of having their own land and some other divisions of the land. So, but that is not yet time. And all that's happening because Bible prophecy has to come to pass, and it has to fall in line with the timeline of God.
The thing is, what I found interesting is there are so many people who believe that some of these Western countries at some stage are going to go against, okay, they will eventually, but anytime soon are going to go against Israel and be seen to be in war against Israel.
Mm.
That is only going to happen at, the Armageddon.
Yes.
Right now, you have to understand that America cannot move away from Israel because, first of all, there is a lot of sharing of technology.
Yes.
And now there is all this talk of American aid to Israel, American aid to Israel. But they don't say how much the people who are actually, a lot of even the military industrial complex, the people who manufacture these weapons and what, in America, are Jews, and they will not go against their nation.
Mm.
And that's the thing about them. Even in Russia, even in the UK, even in Germany, there are people there who are very, very, who are, you know, intelligent people, and who have been heavily involved in some of these things, who are not going to go against Israel. So that's why you find that They will come out and make these big statements against Israel and what. But when push comes to shove, and ultimately they will end up supporting Israel one way or the other.
Yes.
And that is not going to change anytime soon.
Yes.
Then people like Iran discover that they actually have no allies.
Yes.
They just have well-wishers.
Yes.
Now that's a difference. Yes. A well-wisher is somebody who will sit back and say, well, I wish you success. But allies are those who are going to actually get dirty with you,
yes,
and get involved either through finance or through some means,
yes,
to be with you. And Israel has so many allies.
Yes.
Iran doesn't. It just has well-wishers.
Yes. Mm. And actually, there's a scriptures which I want to read here, which speaks exactly of what you have been saying.
Mm.
Because at the heat of the day, during tribulation days, America will still stand with Israel.
Mm.
Now, I want to read it. It says, Revelation chapter 12 from verse 1, says, now a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon, and under her feet, and on her head a garland of 12 stars. Then, being with child, she cried out in labor and in pain to give birth. And another sign appeared in heaven, behold, a great fiery red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and 7 diadems on his head. His tail drew a third of the stars of the heaven, and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth, to devour her with child as it was born. She bore a male child who had to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God and his throne. Then the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. So, like, exactly, this is the state of nation of Israel, what is going through.
Mm.
But it happens that even in the days of tribulation, she will ask to, because this is a scripture which talks of Israel in the days of tribulation, and when everyone has actually gone ahead against her, mostly the system of the Antichrist, the Antichrist and all nations would want, like what it says here, that verse 3 says, another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon, which is, of course, the system of the Antichrist, having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems on his head, which is the system of the Antichrist. So all these, they will come and want to actually take over Israel, and actually they will mistreat Israel. Even reading from Zechariah, which speaks about how the whole nations will come against Israel and the Antichrist will persuade them to come against Israel. Still in that time, the West, led by America, will still be standing with her. Yes.
That's interesting.
Yes.
So anyhow, now, there's something else we're tracking. I don't know what you found out on it, on the World Health Organization and their policy.
Yes.
Of pandemic preparedness treaty. I don't know what else you've done about it.
Okay, not so much, because what they're actually doing right now is to prepare for the meeting.
Which is in May.
The voting, actually. They are voting, and also it will be in that meeting.
Mm.
But the nations, all these member states of the World Health Organization, they're actually making sure that they persuade them. That's the thing they're doing. Because even like what you spoke about in this policy, you know, when the enemy tries to fight and finds a resistance, it will go low into
some kind of hibernation, then come back.
But if it again finds another resistance, the same resistance, then it will come into dialogue. Now we talk, and that's what they're doing, because they're making sure that they meet people in different, mostly sending their delegates to different nations, and making, they are mostly member states, they are of World Health Organization. So they will send their delegates to make sure that they discuss. And that's the place where they're going into, so that when they come, and we spoke about it, and we said that they've hidden the draft now. Formerly, they had opened it to everyone. But right now, it's only provisional to their member states, and making sure that they should actually, giving them, of course, the dialogue way of things. And in dialogue, that's, if you don't stand your ground, that means you can be taken off.
Yes.
Yes.
Because actually, that's a tactic of the devil which people don't understand. It's very, very effective.
Yes.
Because when you stand your ground, there's no way he can win. There is nobody who is of Jesus Christ who stands their ground and the devil wins. He cannot win.
No.
There is only one but result in that in defeat. However, he has always gone down to his cardinal trick, which is deception.
Yes.
Back to the same deception of the Garden of Eden, where he presents something which is going to destroy you as though it was of some advantage.
Yes.
You know, if you eat this fruit, you're going to be like God, knowing the word. And deception. And usually, deception works where confrontation doesn't.
Yes.
They hardly ever use confrontation.
Yes.
So now, just like it is with this religious policy. Yes. Now, and make no mistake, this is the devil.
Yes.
Regardless of they might use Christians and who are inside there. But, you know, Christians actually can be used by the enemy, especially if their mind is on just some budget, which is going to come from government.
And that's what I've seen, that now they are calling, sending people that now you come and we have a meeting.
And we discuss.
And we discuss.
And then they will say, we discussed with people and this is what they came up with.
Yes.
And I know their trick. And even afterwards, they say that we even have some transport refund for you. I told them, go and get lost. I am not interested. You're the one who brought me here. Like, I'm not interested. Me, I'm here to oppose you.
Yes.
So you see the kind of, now you see there are so many people who will be softened.
With that.
Yeah, with that. And so now, me, I know how the devil takes over.
Yes.
Through discussion. No. This is, you know, let's talk it over and so on. Then somehow your guard goes down.
Yes.
And you don't understand that this is not for now. This is what World Health Organization is doing. But we pray God that the nations, 170 member states, which include our own nation, know that I don't know if our nation is, you know, because these people are so sold out to everything. Mm. But I pray that enough nations form some kind of quorum, resist it, and it doesn't work out because they are trying so hard to push it. Because after that, there is going to be lockdown after lockdown. They can even declare a lockdown over climate emergency.
Yes.
Lockdown. Lockdown. There's going to be lockdown after lockdown. There's going to be total control. Actually, if they were to pass that thing, they would have taken a huge step as far as they are concerned towards producing the sort of atmosphere for the mark of the beast. So that thing would be dangerous if it passed. But we pray God it doesn't pass, because, and actually there is an uprising, because previously what caused it not to pass is the draft went out.
Yes.
And now it started being discussed in parliaments, in congresses, and so on. And everybody, then governments were put under pressure not to sign it. But now there are governments which you see now, like Kenya, like Uganda, Kenya, they went full swing. They even passed a law where all children are marked by some kind of tattoo inside them when they are born. That's more or less mark of the beast stuff. And it is being passed. All these things have been done since Prince Charles visited that nation. It's amazing how leaders can be one thing before they become leaders, and then a totally different thing when they become leaders. How the leader of that nation was so Christian, you know, and the church and what and so on. And as soon as he goes there, because that thing which they passed of marking people using a tattoo which is inside under the skin.
Yes.
Can you imagine? It was so bad that even a Muslim senator, a Muslim senator, came in the Senate and said, but you people, I'm a Muslim. But he said, this is clearly the mark of the beast. He said, like, why am I, you have a president who is supposed to be a Christian. But me, I'm a Muslim and I'm seeing this is clearly going towards the mark of the beast. Now, if even a Muslim is seeing it, now, and yet people who are Christians are not seeing certain things. You know, these are the things which shock me. And somebody was before, you know, was very Christian, you know, yeah, this is good for the, anyway.
There's one thing which I'm seeing with these globalist and New World Order people. What they want is, they want to find a place where they can practice as a prototype all their systems. Because now you see in Kenya, that one passes and it's being planned to for them to prepare and practice their system. Talking about surveillance, even it's there in Kenya, like where all your driving documents, all everything is in one thing, and you can just be tracked wherever you go. Also, your car, it's being tracked, everything. So it's, they just want to find a place where they can practice all their system.
A prototype.
Yeah, a prototype for their system. And for us as children of God, like the way that scripture says that the land which is allotted to the righteous
mm.
shall not fall under the sway of the devil, cannot fall under the dominion of the enemy.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we should actually fight for, and that's what we are actually fighting for here. Mm. That everything we are fighting for is against the world system.
And what I realize in line with what you're saying is that those prototype nations are in different places.
Yes.
For instance, Australia.
Yes.
Even during COVID, was a prototype of everybody has, like, it was a complete dictatorship. They couldn't sleep, and I don't know if they even call themselves the free world.
Mm.
You're freer in Uganda than in Australia.
Mm.
Because now one member of parliament was threatening to arrest Elon Musk for allowing freedom of speech on his platform.
Yes.
Ex-formerly Twitter.
Yes.
And they are so angry because they want to be in control of what, you know, what information gets to people.
Yes.
And Elon Musk has refused. Then in South America, they have Brazil,
yes.
where they are also fighting
yes.
X or Twitter, former Twitter. In Africa, I think South Africa and Kenya are being used a bit as prototype. I think now Kenya more or less because...
Very well.
Because I think...
Everything passes now.
Now in Kenya, everything passes.
Yes.
They are being used now as prototype nations for... And now they expect that since these are big, somehow all the nations around, so if Kenya adapts all these things and so on, then all, perhaps Uganda and all the other nations around would be forced to go.
Eh? I'd even heard that the UN wants to shift.
No, they have already done that. They have already done that.
All their workers.
Yeah, a good percentage of their workers now to Nairobi. And of course, for the UN to shift there, Kenya has got to have agreed to certain conditions. Okay? Because you know what the UN represents.
Yes.
So they have got to have agreed certain conditions, which they have put in place for them to come there. So it comes as some kind of development and so on, but it has its consequences.
Yes. Of course, in China is just one of its own.
No, China is China is the dragon.
Yes.
The dragon. So that one is like going to be that side always.
Yes.
But the thing is, what we want now is God is going to have also a prototype nation.
Yes.
Yeah. And now the prototype nation, now here is where you're going to see the separation of sheep and goat nations. Because the nations which stay on the side of God.
Yes.
You saw what happened with Argentina.
Yes.
They were going down that path of that far leftism.
Yes.
And they were suffering their budget, their economy was going in shambles and so on.
Yes.
Then they got somebody who has a totally different mindset.
Yes.
And he has turned that nation because they called him far right.
Yes.
Far right just means that you're conservative. It just means that you think things are supposed to be done in a certain order which was once there.
Yes.
Far left means that you're going against every order.
Mm.
You rail against everything that has been there.
Mm.
Somehow everything that was there was wrong and everything that is apparently new is right.
Yes.
So... And now suddenly, Argentina economy is functioning.
Very well.
People are doing well.
Mm.
Now even the inflation has reduced and so on.
Yes.
Now you see that has taken the direction of a sheep nation.
Yes.
And the blessing of God is on it.
Yes.
So God is also going to have his prototypes.
Yes.
So if Brazil goes down the path of the devil,
yes.
as they are very quickly doing,
then
Argentina goes down a different path. Then God shows, and within a short time, Brazil is going down.
Yes.
And Argentina is going up,
yes.
so that the contrast is very clear.
Yes.
So now, if Kenya goes down, okay, if,
yes.
That's being a big if, because we pray for them.
Yes, of course.
Go down a certain path, then what apparently was good, you see, it is so easy.
Mm.
You just have to open up a little to the devil.
Yes.
And he will destroy all the order that he just needs a little foothold.
Yes.
Because he cometh not but to steal, kill, and destroy.
Yes.
So just a little foothold.
Yes.
And he will destroy a whole nation.
Yes.
Then, if Uganda becomes a prototype for God, in a short time, a very, very short time, this economy functions, people start getting money, people start getting rich, everything starts. So, and it doesn't take long when God is involved. It doesn't take long for the devil to destroy, and it doesn't take long for God to uplift in a very short time.
Let me give an example. Like Germany, before Hitler, that was in 1929, or even earlier. The kind of system which was there, it was so alarming. Everyone was like in a dire situation. The economy is running bad. They were in on top of inflation. People were carrying, of course, wheelbarrows to go and buy a loaf of bread, a wheelbarrow of cash to go and, like, the inflation, everything was like that. Then a demonic person comes in, and in 4 years, he has transformed the country. Everyone is happy. So how much more God?
Because actually,
yes,
when Hitler came in, before the problem started,
yes,
the inflation was down.
Yes,
unemployment was close to, was actually unemployment was almost coming to zero.
Yes,
everything had been turned around.
Yes.
But now that's why the scripture says, yes, the Antichrist, talking about the Antichrist,
yes,
he will destroy many in their prosperity.
Yes.
Because he comes as if,
yes,
it's prosperity.
Yes.
But actually what he's intending to do is to destroy.
Yes.
So the prosperity is very short-lived, just like it was with Hitler.
Mm.
And then afterwards, the destruction.
Yes.
And the destruction takes long.
Long time, yes.
Because the prosperity is just to attract people and deceive them.
Entice them. Yes.
Then afterwards, you see the real colors.
Yes.
And it doesn't take long for the devil to show his real colors, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we've run out of time here. I want to remind you, every Friday in Zambia, near the American Embassy, near a place called Lashatu, opposite Mukwaya General Hospital, from Kabalagala going up towards American Embassy, that's where you find the Watchman Fellowship every Friday at 6 p.m. Come and let us teach you how to be an end-time believer, and not a 1970s believer, and prepare you to actually take on the challenge that God has for us in this end time. Thank you so much for joining us here. God bless you all. Have yourselves a wonderful evening.
That was The Watchman. Join us for our Friday fellowship, 5:30 p.m. at The Realm, along Gaba Road, near the American Embassy, opposite Mukwaya General Hospital. To connect to the anointing upon The Watchman, you can give through the ministry mobile money line, that is +256 780 290 555, or +256 755 290 555. Follow us on our Facebook page, The Watchman, on Twitter at UGWatchman, Instagram at @_UGWatchman, on TikTok at The Watchman Ministry, and on YouTube, Ugandan Watchman. Or send us an email using info@ugwatchman.com. For more information on previous messages, on how to give, The Watchman magazine, books by The Watchman and more, visit our website at ugwatchman.com. The Watchman, the King is coming.